What is in a word? Well, if that word was organic back in 1990, there was something made of carbon compounds. If that word is organic today, there is well over $50 billion in the word. And all that money leads us to ask, will it be possible to keep organic organic?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1186th edition of the Food Chain. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Manila who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, there is a lot of money in the word organic, $50 billion a year, give or take, right here in the U.S. of A. The reason there is a lot of money in the word organic is that folks believe the word means something. What folks believe the word means is that the food that the word organic has been affixed to has been grown and processed with integrity. But when one is in the business of growing and processing food, that integrity stuff can be pretty expensive. And so, being astute business people, the growers and processors of organic foods are always on the lookout for ways to cut the costs of integrity. The easiest way to cut the costs of integrity is to pack one's bags full of money and head to Washington, D.C. All that money going to Washington, D.C. leads us to ask, will it be possible to keep organic organic? Well, who better to ask than a warrior on the front lines of the war over that word organic? Dave Chapman, Long Wind Farms, and the Real Organic Project. Dave, welcome back.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be here.
Good to be here. Now, you've been quite the warrior lately, haven't you?
There's been a lot of conversation going on, actually, around the world around this very subject.
Well, and when we first touched upon this well over a year ago, you were just in the throes of, I think, of starting up the Real Organic Project?
Yes, yeah.
And tell us a little bit about the Real Organic Project.
Well, the Real Organic Project is an attempt of a number of organic farmers to try and, I'd say, protect what that word stands for, to protect. You know, organic is getting buffeted. The word's getting buffeted. The organic movement is still strong. So the question really is whether we can maintain a term that really means what it's intended to mean and what it means in the rest of the world. This is a pretty much an American phenomenon that the term organic is being degraded. So the Real Organic Project was a group of farmers and eaters and advocates who got together about a year and a quarter ago. And we are attempting to get people to talk about this and think about it and think about what does organic really mean and why is that important to them. And also, very importantly, how can they find it? Mm-hmm. How can they tell what it is that they're buying, because there is a lot of real organic food that is being sold. Most of the farmers who are certified by the USDA really are organic, but there's a relative handful of farms producing a massive amount of food that isn't. And that's what we're trying to do, is kind of clean it up.
Good. And a good example of that need would be you folks at Long Wind Farms up there in Vermont. You grow seasonal organic tomatoes, right?
Yes. Well, we grow in a greenhouse, so it's a very long season, but yes.
Okay.
We're growing organic tomatoes in the soil, in the greenhouse, in the ground.
Okay.
And I would say I'm very involved in this, but our farm happens to be going fine. A great many farms are not.
Mm-hmm.
especially the dairy and the poultry farmers are really getting beat up, but a number of berry growers, a number of startup right. farmers, especially if you're trying to get into the wholesale markets, where real organic finds a very easy ride is in direct to consumer
right.
sales. So people who know their farmer,
which is what you do, right? You do a lot of that.
Sell mostly into wholesale market.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're in there competing with organic hydroponic tomatoes from who knows where.
Yes. Well, actually, I do know where, but yes, we're competing with them. They mostly come from Mexico.
Sure. And mostly consumers of organics don't know where, because there is no distinguishing mark on the label between somebody like Dave Chapman, who's growing organic tomatoes way up there in Vermont, and competing with an industrial scale grower who's growing them in water way down in Mexico. There's nothing to distinguish the two.
Yes, that's correct. And they're both just sold as certified organic. And you know, that's the conversation. They shouldn't be called organic. It's fine to sell them as unsprayed hydroponic. I would strongly support that. I'd help them make the label. But to take over the organic label, that's just really, it's fraud. It's really just trying to fool
people. It's war, right? For people like you who you know, are struggling to maintain the integrity of that word, it's kind of like war. Let's go back, you know, and set the stage for people who really don't understand the difference between organic and hydroponic.
Sure.
There are essentially two ways of growing plants, right? One way
is almost opposite ways.
Yeah. One way is
so in a real organic system, organic farming is about working with, enhancing, protecting the life in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always been the basic kind of North Star of organic farming, is the belief that through really building on the biological diversity of a healthy soil system, and a healthy soil system would include for sure living plants as a part of it, and animals, and many, many little animals crawling around, and billions of things that you can't see, that all of that leads to greater plant health, greater animal health, greater human health, and I think, as we have come to believe now, greater climate health.
So So the idea then is that the organic farmer feeds the soil, and the soil then feeds the plant, and the plant then feeds the people, and so on. But the hydroponic technology, not like that at all, is it?
Actually, it's the opposite philosophy. In hydroponics is a system where all the nutrition for the plant is provided as a liquid feed.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you're growing it in a bucket of water, or actually sometimes they'll even grow it with the roots just hanging in the air, and they just keep spraying the nutrients on them. But more common for things like berries and tomatoes and cucumbers and peppers, is that they will grow in some kind of a container filled with something like shredded coconut husks.
Kind of an inert substance,
Yes, it's very inert. Coconut husks are, of course, natural, but they're loved in hydroponic because they don't break down, they don't rot.
Right.
So you just got this kind of porous thing. It looks like maybe a cedar shaving, something like that. And then they'll just, every time they water, that irrigation has a nutrient solution.
Mm-hmm.
And you can grow very big, beautiful plants with hydroponic. It works, just as conventional agriculture works. But it's the opposite philosophy. It's the philosophy of feed the plant. We know what the plant wants. They think they know.
Mm-hmm.
And so feed the plant and never mind the soil. In the case of hydro, they actually don't have any soil.
So in a very real sense, the hydroponic farmer must take on the role of nature itself, or God, and provide all of the nutrition the plant requires when it requires it. That takes a lot of smarts, doesn't it?
Well, you know, Michael, it's possible that we aren't quite that smart. So the problem is we do know, you know, we human beings know how to create a nutrient solution that will make a plant grow big and green, and they can get a very high yield per acre. But as Vandana Shiva said, let's not confuse yield per acre with health per acre. So can they replicate the inherent brilliance of a fertile soil system? And I have never met a soil scientist yet who thought that they could. They said, we know the food will be different. We don't necessarily know how. That's the whole point. But we know that nutritionally it's going to be quite different. And I would say of the soil scientists that I've talked to, they've all said, and nutritionally inferior.
Well, the original intent of the National Organic Program, I think, it can be summed up in this brief paragraph that was submitted to the, it was a recommendation to the National Organic Program from the National Organic Standards Boards, and we'll separate the two in a moment. The organic farming method derives its name from the practice of maintaining or improving the organic matter content of farm soil through various methods and practices. The reason this is the central theme and foundation of organic farming is not inherent to the organic matter itself, not the fertilizer you put in it, but it's based on the importance of the organic matter to the living organisms that inhabit the soil. So the soil is full of life. And as a farmer, you have to feed that life and provide it what it needs so that whatever the plant needs will be there, courtesy of all of those little organisms. Now, how on earth did agriculture go from that concept, that principle, to the principle of hydroponics, which is just about exactly the opposite?
Yes.
That's the crux.
So hydroponics is sort of the epitome of chemical farming in the sense of some person trying to figure out exactly what a plant needs, figuring out how to make it available to the plant by processing it in a laboratory, a factory somewhere, and then providing it. And if that person happens to not fully understand the complexity of human nutrition
and who and does
plant nutrition
and who does
then they're going to get it wrong, and what they're leaving out we don't know, they don't know, and
but
we'll only find out. Right now there's a massive lab experiment and we are the guinea pigs.
Well, okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, today we're talking about the war. And it is a war over the word organic. Can we water it down so we can make more money with it? Or do we hold on to it or to the original intent and maintain the integrity? Michael Olson with Dave Chapman, Long Wind Farm, way up there in Vermont, and the Real Organic Product Project, and you. Stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, it seems pretty cut and dried. Organic is about soil, and yet soil is a big pain in the butt to some. A lot easier to do it without soil if you can get away with it. Probably not talking about the big commodity crops like wheat and corn and soybeans like that, but think about what we could do with all of the specialty crops that we could take out of the soil and put in buckets and move them into a warehouse and grow them under our total control. Might make a big difference, and that, I think, is why we're seeing a big push to change the nature of what organic is. So we're with Dave Chapman today. Dave's been fighting this battle for quite a while. How long have you been fighting this battle, Dave?
Oh, I think it's been going on for about 6 years now, Michael.
Wow. And do you see any let up? Do you see any chance that you might be able to win it?
Well, we're winning.
Good.
Because people are finding out about it. And that's all we need. Our goal is not really about protecting a brand or even about building a brand. Our goal is about educating people, and I include myself in that, educating ourselves so that we understand the benefits of real organic, and that we also figure out how to grow it and how to get it, how to connect to the people and the farmers. We're winning.
How to find the food with its farmer's face on it, so you can look into the eyes and know what's in the food. You know, I like to, if possible, kind of figure out how it is that people were able to get into the organic world and change the essential nature of what it is to be organic. Because am I wrong in making that assertion? It seems like organic stands on two legs. One leg is the soil, and the other leg is the fact that there are no poisons used to grow the food. Is that about right?
That's about right. I mean, we need to make sure we include livestock in this.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. So if they take soil out of the equation, it seems to me that organic is left to stand on one leg.
Yes. And it sort of misses the point. In the idea of organic, the belief system where the pioneers came from, it was always believed that if you could get the work with this biologically complex system to enhance it and encourage it, that the outcome would be that you don't need to use pesticides, you don't need to use insecticides or fungicides or herbicides. And I believe that's true. And so people are confusing the result with the cause. And what's happening now is that people think, well, if there's no use of a pesticide, then it's organic. And, of course, that's become interpreted even a little bit differently to say if there's no use of a synthetic pesticide, then it's organic. So this is what's called substitution organic, where they say instead of calcium nitrate as a fertilizer, I'm going to use hydrolyzed soy protein. It's just substituting a plant available nitrogen for another. And the same would be true of saying, well, instead of using, you know, some synthetic insecticide, I'm going to use some natural pesticide. But the real goal of real organic is not to use any pesticides at all, mm-hmm. and not to need to, because you've got a balanced system.
But to have a balanced system, you have to have soil.
You've got to have soil. You know, we're not going to do well as a species without soil. You know, I had a group of students from Dartmouth College come up, and they were doing a research project for NASA. And they were trying to figure out, well, how can we provide a food system for people living in a space station? And they wanted to talk to me about hydroponics. I said, sure, I can talk about it. And they said, do you think that there'd be any health issues if you were living on a diet of 100% hydroponic food? And I said, well, for how long? And they said, 2 years. And I said, you might be okay for 2 years. 10 years, I wouldn't count on having any kids. It's right. Like, you know, this is, as I say, a lab experiment in which we're the guinea pigs. And we don't know what happens with this.
Yeah, all the experiments on what happens tend to be 90 days or 60 days or something right. like that. So how do you really know what happens in 10 years? You don't. You just have to.
We don't.
You don't. So let's turn to this business of organics. And first of all, it started with a law, right? And it was farmers like you who made this law.
Yes, with some help from some bureaucrats. But
sure.
There was a lot of involvement, and it was a good law. The Organic Food Production Act is a good law. It's one of the better laws that has been written. And I think it had the highest of intent and the highest of purpose. But as with anything that is, you know where we got into our problem, Michael, is that we actually became successful economically.
Oh, yeah. And $50 billion, you know.
That's a good thing. And that wasn't done through advertising. That was done because people naturally, as they learn more about what's happening in the food system, and it's not good what's happening in the food
system.
They
want food with integrity.
Naturally wanted to find real food. They wanted to find food that was grown in a way that would be healthy for them and their kids and, you know, be good for the workers on the farms and be good for the climate. Everybody, you know, this is the most positive of human motivations, this drive towards organic. The problem is that money is like blood in the water, and the sharks come. And that's just the nature of capitalism.
Well, yeah, you know, I always say everything went well until we gave the word to the government. And then, what happened when we gave the word to the government through the law, they established the National Organic Program to oversee all of this, correct?
Yes.
And the National Organic Program sits in Washington, D.C., and they rely on an organization called the National Organic Standards Board to determine what should or should not be organic. Am I wrong?
No, well, that's basically correct. They're supposed to be referring to the Organic Food Production Act as the ultimate arbiter,
right?
If it's in that, then that should be the law. But go ahead, yes?
Okay.
So, yes, the NOSB, the National Organic Standards Board, is a group of 15 citizens chosen by the Secretary of Agriculture to represent you and me in helping to clarify any misunderstandings and to keep the organic standard strong. They're especially tasked with making the decisions on items used in processing, whether they should be allowed or not. So
sure.
In processing, they allow some synthetics, and that's what the NOSB tries to make a decision on. The problem, there are two big problems. One big problem is that the Secretary of Agriculture picks the people on the NOSB. Mm-hmm. And frankly, Sonny Perdue is not who I would say should be in charge of those decisions.
Who's
our Secretary of Agriculture.
Okay, good.
So I just don't think he's qualified to make those decisions. I don't think he cares about organic. So that's one profound problem. The other problem is that even when the NOSB has made really good decisions, and by and large they have, I think the future might tell a different story, but by and large up till now, I agree with the decisions that these people have made, and yet their decisions are often set aside or ignored by the National Organic Program.
Ah, so the NOSB, the National Organic Standards Board, is an advisory board.
Yes.
This is what we advise you to do. But
yes,
the National Organic Program can say, maybe, maybe not. Maybe I'll do it, maybe I won't do it. Now,
yeah.
So you have this setup in Washington, D.C., and then the money comes to town. And you can't blame them for going to town.
It's what they do,
you know. You go to the people who are making the rules and you have suitcases full of cash or whatever, and you do business. So, as I mentioned in the opening, this business of organic integrity can get pretty expensive. How do you get rid of weeds if you can't use glyphosate? Well, you have to use machinery or people, and that's much more expensive than glyphosate. So what if you want to use glyphosate somehow? Well, you can't, because this is organics, and organics does not use glyphosate. And yet, that's what they're doing. Am I wrong?
Well,
I mean, to a certain extent. I'm picking up on the article you wrote on your on your blog.
Yes, yes. So that's a very, very strange and particular case where the National Organic Program is saying that people who are hydroponic producers who are transitioning to organic can do it essentially overnight. And for everybody else, there's a three-year transition period. Right. So I think the NOP has just made a grievous mistake, and I assume that they're going to correct that, and I hope soon. So, you know, yes, that is a glaring omission. But I would say, as exciting as it is to kind of, you know, get angry about them allowing glyphosate, the bigger issue is that there is no logic to allowing hydroponic, and that's the big issue. You know, we've got over $1 billion, according to the hydroponic industry themselves, over $1 billion in sales, annual sales of hydroponic organic products. So that's what we really need to talk about, is do we want to go into the store and buy berries that are certified organic that are actually grown without any soil at all? Or do we want to go into the store and buy tomatoes? And I would say that the taste of these products reflects the fact that they were grown with an inferior nutrition. That would be my opinion.
Okay, well, I think I would tend to agree with you, but don't tell anybody I think that way. But so how on earth did the hydroponic industry waltz in the door of the National Organic Program and kick the leg out of one half of what the organics is? You know,
quietly.
Well,
they did it very quietly. So this was a velvet revolution, and there was no fanfare. There was no kicking. It was done at night, very quietly, and the lobbying efforts were done at the highest levels of the USDA. These were not big public debates. And all of a sudden, we looked around one day, and we saw, you know, $100 million, $200 million of sales of stuff that, as it turned out, was grown hydroponically. But no one knew, because you can't tell by looking at it. And, you know, when I was on the USDA task force to study this, and at the time, we thought that hydroponic tomatoes were the biggest crop that had gained market, in my opinion, illegally. And what we discovered during that task force, that in fact, Driscoll's Berries had over 1,000 acres of hydroponic berries being sold as organic. So who knew? Nobody knew. Nobody in the stores knew. Nobody, I've talked to people, nobody who worked in the stores knew. The eaters didn't know. at that time, even the Organic Trade Association, their lobbyists didn't know. So this was a very quiet, skillfully done shift. And it was a hostile takeover, but it was done so quietly that it never created any opposition.
So in essence, since there are no labeling requirements for hydroponics, there's no way to know.
Exactly.
A berry's a berry, and you have no way
of knowing. A berry's a berry. And if you ask the major hydroponic producers in this country, if they are hydroponic, they will write you a letter and say they are not. So there's just no transparency on this.
Now, you know, if you're Driscoll, you can't really blame Driscoll for wanting to have hydroponic berries, because when it gets right down to it, most of the problems they face in the berry industry relate to the fact that the berries are in the ground. And if you can get them
cheaper.
Yeah, if you can get them out of the ground, you can do so much more with so much less money. You don't have to fumigate the soil all the time. You don't have to, you know, hire stoop labor. The possibilities are just incredible. So
yeah, if they actually get the plants to market a year earlier, at least on blueberries.
Yeah.
So it's a very accelerated thing, and the yield per acre is higher. So there's lots of reasons why the conventional industry has gone to hydroponic. At this point, around the world, conventional greenhouse tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers are virtually 100% hydroponic. And it's just because if you don't say, well, it should be grown in the soil, the one exception to that is the organic production around the world.
Wow. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What with Dave Chapman. We're talking about organics. We're talking about whether we can, in fact, keep the organic in organics, because there's a lot of pressure to change that organic into something much more convenient for industrial production, thus leaving those small farmers of the world, people like Dave Chapman, who grows tomatoes in soil organically, tough to compete. We will be right back.
Much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yeah, I got a lot to say here, a whole bunch about the word organic. Is it really organic anymore? Don't really know just by looking at the label. One of the principles of organic agriculture was always the soil, and the principle that the farmer would feed the soil and make it healthy and robust and full of life, and that life would in turn feed the plant, and the plant would grow up healthy and strong, be able to withstand the stresses of the environment, the pests and whatnot, be able to stand up to those things and survive without poisons. And thus, the food we eat, the organic food we eat, would be full of health and vitality. But somewhere, some place along the line, during the Great Velvet Revolution, as Dave Chapman says, somebody snuck into Washington, D.C. and changed the law. You no longer have to be in the soil to be organic. You can be in a bucket of water or something like that. And you don't even need soil anymore. Now, the only thing left I see with organic is that it doesn't have, it's not, you don't, you, they're not allowed to use chemical pesticides. Is that the extent of it? What's left, Dave?
They are supposed to use fertilizers that are approved in organic production also. So, but I want to say that, you know, the intention in organic farming is that these fertilizers are intended as amendments, as supplements, not as replacements for the basic processes of the soil that produce the fertility. And in this case, of course, they've completely replaced it. So, the mechanisms by which the microbial life in the soil produces the nutrition for the plant, and this wonderful exchange between the plant and the microbes, and the plant is providing the microbes with the sugars that they make through photosynthesis, and the microbes are providing the plant with the minerals that they're mining from the soil. It's an amazing dance. It really is. So,
it's a dance of life. Yeah.
So when you give that up, I think you give up a lot. There's one thing I wanted to say, Michael, and that is that, just to make clear, when I go in the store, I still buy organic. Right, and I don't want to make people think that there's no meaning to the label. It's just that the label's been compromised, and we need to do our best to fix that. And it's been, you know, that very issue is a challenge that everybody in the organic community, all the farmers, all the advocates, are confused by, because they feel like if we don't speak up, we're just going to lose it. I mean, the rate of loss is phenomenal at this point. But if we do speak up, people get discouraged and turn away from organic. So I just want to say that this is a complex conversation and not given to just simple, you know, overreaction.
Well, there seems to be, in my way of thinking, only one real solution to that. But I'll pick that up when we get a little bit further down the line here, because I wanted to turn back to something you said, and that is that we must remember the animals too. And one of the situations that you point out is the Aurora Dairy organic yes. farm. So how did that work out?
Well, Aurora is the biggest certified organic dairy farm in the world. And they have a series of large CAFOs. A CAFO is a concentrated animal feeding operation. And it's a big confinement dairy where the animals basically, you know, stand around on a concrete floor and get fed and get milked two or three times a day. And very seldom will they ever go and stand on the ground and eat grass. So that's how all American conventional dairying is being pushed now. And we know that the only dairies being built now are CAFOs, and the smaller family farms are going out of business at a high rate. And now, just amazingly, the same thing is happening in organic. And that's because even though the CAFOs do not qualify for the current standards, those standards do not seem to be enforced. And the story of Aurora was really carefully told in a major front page Washington Post story in 2017. And they'd done about an 8-month investigative journalist piece on them, where they did months of research and they visited the farm a number of times, and they did flyovers with drones, and they tested the milk and compared it to milk that they knew was from pasture-raised cattle and from milk from animals that were not raised on pasture, that were from CAFOs. And the Aurora milk did not test out as being pasture-raised. You can actually test the nutrients in milk and tell whether or not those cows were eating fresh grass or not. So...
which is a fundamental precept of organic animal agriculture too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is.
So the same principle, where you're feeding the animal from the soil and not from a bucket.
Exactly. And it enables the animal to be part of that cycle, so their manure is returned to the soil in a kind of a healthy concentration. These big CAFOs have these terrible manure lagoons, which create this toxic atmosphere for miles around. You don't want to live next to an Aurora dairy. And they're doing that because the food that the animals eat comes from miles away. They can't get the manure back to the land. I think it was Wendell Berry who said they've taken a great solution and turned it into two problems. And it's a tragic thing. And it's tragic for American farmers who are being forced to either basically become a CAFO or go out of business. Mm-hmm. So we're all in a downward spiral. But the thing, Michael, that is most poignant about this is that consumers would not choose to buy milk from a CAFO if they had a choice. And so, in fact, my solution for all of this is, let's take honest pictures, honest images of where the food is produced. So if it comes from Aurora, let's have a picture of Aurora on the milk carton. And if it comes from, you know, Jack and Ann Laser's beautiful pasture-raised dairy operation, let's have a picture of those cows out on the pasture. And we'll put them both on the shelf, and we'll see who goes out of business. Because I don't think it's going to be Jack and Ann.
Well,
I think people will choose to buy the milk coming from cows on pasture any day of the week.
It seems like what you said about animal agriculture is almost exactly what you've been saying about hydroponic production of food as well.
It's hydroponics is just a CAFO for vegetables.
Yeah, there you go. Now, so it seems like through this velvet revolution that you talk about, wherein, you know, some very astute producers kind of snuck into Washington, D.C. in the middle of the night and talked to some very important people. And without so much as the buy your leave, all of a sudden hydroponics became organic and not distinguishable from the organics food being produced in the soil, which was the original intent. So it seems to me, with all due respects, that they've actually succeeded in taking the integrity out of the word organic.
Yes.
If I were to walk down to the supermarket and there would be a carton of organic milk, wouldn't know what the heck that meant.
Yes. And if it was a dozen organic eggs, the likelihood is they would be from a CAFO. In the case of eggs, it's over 75% are coming from CAFOs.
Wow.
That's the worst of all of them.
Eggs are
the
worst.
And again, yeah. if you showed people a picture of those, and you showed them a picture of Cameron Mulberg's chickens out on pasture and those eggs, people would pay twice as much for the real organic. People want to eat real food. They just don't know.
Well, and the only thing they have, and I think, you know, my family, is that my wife is a absolute tracker down of organic food. If it's not organic, I don't think she'd eat it.
She's
that dedicated. So when she listens to this show, I'm afraid that the bleep is going to hit the fan. But that doesn't mean that all organic food has been industrialized to the extent that you don't know what it means.
Not at all.
Not at all. So the question then becomes, what do we do? How do we take back? How do we fight back and get our word back? Or is it too late to get the word back?
You go to our website and you sign up to get the mailings from the realorganicproject.org, and we start a movement here, Michael. It's just us. It's just us.
There are a lot of just us's, though. I mean, it's just not the Organic Project, but there are a bunch of you out there fighting back, are there not?
Oh, yes. Yes, but that's what I mean. So join one. You know, get involved in the conversation, because it's our food, it's our bodies, it's our planet. I don't mean we own it. I mean we are of it. We are part of it. So we can take care of it. It's not easy. And I think, you know, when we lost a big vote in Jacksonville, Florida in 2017.
Which big
and
vote?
I saw...
Which big
oh,
vote?
Oh, it was a big vote in the National Organic Standards Board, and to basically renew their vow, their commitment from 2010 to prohibit hydroponics. And we didn't win. And in 2010, we won by 14-1 or something. I mean, it was overwhelming. And in 2017, we got 7 out of 15 votes. And we were like, the people who were voting against us really just don't understand what organic means. And they were on that board for the wrong reasons. And that's just how it is. So we can rage about it or we can cry about it. But what I saw coming out of the meeting was a lot of people who were very depressed. I had a lot of crying. There was a lot of sense of overwhelm, of hopelessness, of futility. And, you know, I just think, well, it's not hopeless. It's not futile. Maybe it's hopeless to retake the National Organic Program. Depends on who gets elected president next time. But whether or not we can retake the National Organic Program, we certainly can create labels that represent the kind of farming we want to support, and we can then go out and support those labels.
So what you're saying
is, I think we can do.
What you're saying is that we need another word for organic that we can take, and we can build a law around it, and then what we'll do is we'll give it to the government. And what happens when we give it to the government?
Well, maybe the government isn't the proper sheriff to be in charge of this word. And I actually believe ultimately we can't just leave the government behind. I think we need to make better government, but I don't think that we can expect government to lead us. we will be the leaders. Government will follow.
Well, wasn't that what happened, though? Wasn't that what happened when we developed the word organic? It just came from us down here in the dirt.
It just came from us. That's right. That's right. It was not a government program.
And
you know, maybe we should have fought harder back then. And plenty of us did fight back then, and plenty didn't. It wasn't clear. I know for myself, Michael, at that point, I thought when the NOP was created, I thought, well, I'm just one person. I can't stop the government from doing something. So I'm just going to farm the best I can and live my life. And frankly, until about 6 years ago, I thought the program was working pretty well. And I thought, well, I guess I was wrong. It's really working pretty well. But that's because I live in Vermont. And, you know, we don't have any organic CAFOs in Vermont. And we don't have any organic hydroponic in Vermont. So our certifiers, Vermont Organic Farmers, is part of NOFA. And they have high integrity. And they really understand it. They get organic. So it's not just a business for them. So for in Vermont, it was working. And then when I got into this realization that this hydroponics was getting certified on a huge scale, I was like, oh, my God, what is this? Must be a mistake. Well, as it turned out, it was a mistake, but it was not a mistake that the National Organic Program was making.
Right.
They knew what was happening.
Well, Dave Chapman, we are out of time. Folks can tune in with you at the realorganicproject.org and follow. And maybe when we all get together again, we can develop a new word for organic and start all over and get our word back, get our integrity back. Folks, this has been the Food Chain Radio Program. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain? Cheap food isn't, and it's not. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.